Hello, I'm Ellen Bintz, coming today from Wheaton, Illinois in the United States. Welcome to Impact, a podcast about how we can each bring about real change in the world and getting practical in making that happen.
And hello, I'm Clive Johnson, coming today from Leigh-on-Sea near London in the UK. A special welcome if you're listening for the first time, and a big thank you to our new subscribers. Each week, we look at one aspect of how we can connect our hearts to offer healing for others with our collective intention, prayers, and meditation, and go behind the headlines of a critical happening in our world that needs our attention right now.
In today's episode, we take one of these regular deep dives to more fully understand and tune in with something many of us may know only a little about and see where we might hone in with our prayers and intentions. And as we record, it's April 17th, 2024.
And as we record, tension in the Middle East has been really more precarious as Israel considers its response to a massive drone attack aimed at its territory by Iran over this weekend, which was largely thwarted by a strong and sophisticated defense. Iran, in turn, says that this was its response to an Israeli attack on its diplomatic compound in Damascus on 1st of April. That killed seven of its military advisors, including three senior commanders. Allies of Israel are urging a calming of the tension in what is feared could rapidly escalate into a more deadly conflict. Iran's support for partners in Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Gaza, and Yemen, notably Hezbollah and the Houthis, which have exchanged fire with Israel throughout the latest war between Israel and Hamas, is well known. So in this special episode, we take a look at why the two countries have such an uneasy relationship, looking at the history and major points of difference that have brought them to this current state of mistrust.
And we might want to say that we're doing a little bit of a primer on this, starting in the 40s, 1940s, because as we were talking about before, Clive, scholars have studied this their whole lives, why there is this conflict, and it's so deep-seated and difficult to tease through that starting, we'll start in the late 40s to give a background of what's been happening, what's been going on.
Exactly. It's a very complicated picture. So we're picking up on the main aspects, really.
Right. So the hostility between Israel and Iran, it's rooted in deep-seated, as we said, geopolitical rivalry and ideological differences. So regional power struggles have evolved over several decades. During this time, relations between the two countries have seen various changes, from ambivalence to friendship, then moving to worsening relations and the current open hostility. So there are four main phases in this relationship that we might want to identify since the creation of the modern state of Israel, which was in May of 1948. The early relations, initially in 1947, Iran was among the countries that voted against the United Nations partition plan for Palestine. And that's the 1947 Nations Partition Plan that recommended a partition of Palestine at the end of the British Mandate and before the creation of the modern state of Israel. It also voted against Israel's admission to the UN in 1949. However, and maybe surprisingly, Iran was the second Muslim majority country to recognize Israel as a sovereign state after Turkey. Then, after the 1953 coup d'etat in Iran, which reinstalled the Western Shah, relations between Iran and Israel significantly improved, with both countries viewing each other as strategic allies against common threats in the region. But then the Iran Revolution of 1979 marked a turning point as Iran severed all diplomatic and commercial ties with Israel. The new theocratic government of Iran did not recognize the legitimacy of Israel as a state. And then the turning from cold peace to open hostility in the 1990s after the collapse of the Soviet Union and Civil Gulf War, which shifted relative power in the Middle East to Iran and Israel. The conflict escalated as Iran developed nuclear technology and supported Islamist groups like Hezbollah, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and Hamas, while Israel allegedly supported groups opposed to the Iranian regime.
Yeah, it's been very interesting, isn't it? This very varied history, obviously largely punctuated by the Iranian Revolution. A major change in direction there. But also, as we were saying, going right back to that, the early creation of the State of Israel, and that was a time when there was meant to be pretty much an even distribution between Palestinian and Israel, the new State of Israel territory, which have, you know, over time, as we know, they've been eroded quite, the Palestinian land's been eroded quite strongly. So that is playing into this as well. And as you were talking, Ellen, I was just thinking about where the attention is of the different nations at different points in time and what their alliances are. As we'll talk about in a while, Israel has always had very strong support from the West, especially the US. Iran has at times been distracted by war on its borders with Iraq. And I wonder if that was one of the times when there was, perhaps turning attention away from what's been going on in Israel. And then, of course, in more recent years, with the rise of these very extremist groups, the jihadist groups, there has been this kind of proxy support, hasn't there, in places like Syria and Yemen and so on, where it's a very complex picture, I think.
It feels like a house of cards, you know, like if one thing falls, things start to tumble, and trying to keep everybody happy is almost impossible. So I feel for the diplomats in this time.
And they are made, if not the two major powers in that region, that sort of band, as it were, that goes through the Middle East, really. So let's have a quick look at some of the ideological and strategic factors that have also had an influence on shaping this opposition between the two. Ideologically, Iran's Islamist regime adopted an ideology that combined radical third worldism. This was the popular at the time of the Cold War. Third worldism was a unity of countries that didn't want to take sides between between the United States and the Soviet Union. And the regime has also been anti-imperialist. There's been some Muslim anti-Semitism, which inherently opposes Israel's existence. Then, of course, there are in Islam, Jerusalem, as in Christianity and Judaism, is a very important sacred center that they kind of have a claim to, really. With these proxies, Iran and Israel have been engaged in an ongoing proxy conflict with Iran supporting groups, we mentioned, like Hezbollah and Hamas. They're just two, actually, but possibly the two better known currently. And Israel conducting airstrikes against Iranian allies in Syria and assassinating Iranian nuclear scientists. The most recent attack in Damascus continues this ongoing, but what is largely a fairly limited and contained show of might between the two countries. Both countries at the same time have sought to expand their influence in this region, with Iran extending its reach in places like Syria, and Israel forming alliances with countries like Azerbaijan in central Eurasia. And we can't ignore international relations either. Iran's stance being influenced by its viewing Israel as an extension of Western imperialism, particularly the United States, and Iran's opposition to American-led peace initiatives in the region. And it's interesting recently, isn't it, with the war with Hamas, we're seeing countries like Qatar, we mentioned before, and Egypt playing a much bigger role. So potentially there are other mediators that can play a part in how Iran and Israel chart their course together remotely diplomatically, shall we say.
Yeah. The U.S. and Iran were allies during the rule of the pro-Western Shah of Iran until his overthrow in 1979. But since that time, the U.S. has viewed Iran's revolutionary Islamic government as a major adversary in the Middle East. Sources of tension include Iran's support for terrorism, course, opposition to the Middle East peace process, the alleged development of weapons of mass destruction that we heard a lot about, and human rights abuses. The U.S. has responded with economic sanctions, diplomatic pressure, military containment, and attempts at dialogue and diplomacy, such as the Iran nuclear deal in 2015, have had limited success and been undermined by the two countries' deep-seated mutual distrust, a lack of direct diplomatic relations, and limited understanding of each other's perspectives. Meanwhile, U.S. support for Israel remains very strong. The U.S. sees Israel as a key strategic ally in the Middle East, providing intelligence, military cooperation, and stability in the region. Having Israel as an ally helps the U.S. maintain influence and counter adversaries like Iran. In particular, Israel is viewed as sharing democratic values and interests similar to the U.S., such as being pro-free market, pro-women's rights, and pro-free speech. Furthermore, there's a broad public support in the U.S. for Israel, particularly among evangelical Christians and the Jewish American community. This public sentiment translates into political support and influence for pro-Israel policies. And the U.S. was the first country to recognize Israel after its founding in 1948. And there's a sense of historical responsibility and guilt over the Holocaust that contributes to the unwavering support. Of the two main candidates for president in this election year in the U.S., Donald Trump is viewed by Israelis as being much more strongly pro-Israel. In his presidency, Trump undertook a number of actions that were strongly aligned with the Israeli right wing, such as recognizing Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights, moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, and cutting off funding for Palestinian refugees. His former ambassador to Israel said the U.S. under Trump would have fully backed Israel in the recent Gaza conflict rather than pushing for humanitarian aid as Biden has done. Current polls show a growing number of Americans across party lines believe Israel has gone too far in its military actions in Gaza. Republicans are taking an uncritical pro-Israel stance, aligning with the views of evangelical Christians and right-wing elements of the American Jewish community. And this could put pressure on Biden to take a more balanced approach, especially from the younger members of the Democrat base, with the potential to influence voter sentiment and turnout in what may be a closely fought election, as we know.
It's interesting, isn't it, that potentially this foreign policy issue could be very significant in which way the U.S. presidential election goes.
Yes.
Where it is so close. You know, there's a lot of speculation around that at the moment. But
And I do feel like in the U.S. we are hearing more dissent for Netanyahu, not necessarily for Israeli people.
Yes.
I think we are able to tease out the difference.
Which is encouraging, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The separating, and he doesn't represent necessarily in people's minds the whole Jewish people.
I saw something yesterday, you know, Holocaust survivors who are coming out against Israelis. They feel like Israel is acting unjustly in ways. So that's interesting, too, that they're speaking out.
It is. It's significant as well, isn't it? That, mm-hmm. you know, as we mentioned before, an earlier episode, the International Court of Justice responding to South Africa's taking Israel, the state of Israel, to that court on a claim of genocide, felt that there was sufficient basis to go forward with a deeper inquiry and investigation.
Yeah.
So not beyond the bounds of possibility in a few years' time that Israel, his current government led, could be itself accused of genocide for what's happening in Gaza and flouting, potentially, it will be seen, this is the allegation, flouting the rules of war, as it were. And with the latest conflict, as I understand it, I was listening to a very good journalist, someone I have quite a lot of regard for, the BBC's Jeremy Bowen. He's been very deep-rooted in the Middle East for a long time. He was basically saying that, as far as he could see, Iran was playing to the games of war with what they were doing with the drone attack. It was kind of, if we wanted to go out with all-out war, we would have sent ballistic missiles right away, and we would have got Hezbollah involved and so on. But this was, we had to respond. This is kind of like a tit-for-tat thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sending these very slow drones, which obviously were largely shot down. As far as I'm aware from what news I've picked up, no one was actually killed as a result of those drone attacks.
That's what I heard also.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it may be Israel feels it in the same way, has to respond in kind again, but perhaps it is low-key, so to speak. Perhaps it's not targeting another embassy compound or whatever. We will see.
Let's hope.
So what has been happening recently in the relationship between Iran and Israel? Well, Iran's attack on Israel with the drones and missiles earlier this week in response to that Israeli airstrike in Damascus was unprecedented, marking a shift in Tehran's approach from using proxies to directly confront Israel. Iran claimed the attack was legitimate under Article 51 of the UN Charter, which gives the inherent right of individual or collective self-defense if an armed attack occurs against a member of the United Nations. But it did not result in significant damage to Israeli targets, as we mentioned. Iran has stated it does not want all-out war and is trying to avoid a broader regional conflict while still wanting to restore its deterrence against Israel. Analysts view Iran's attack as a warning shot to Israel, signaling their willingness to escalate the long-standing shadow war between the two countries. And this comes after Israel has been targeting key figures in Iran's axis of resistance, as it's sometimes called, around the region over the past 6 months. So the relationship between the two countries may be near, if it isn't already, at an all-time low, with both engaged in what could be a dangerous escalation. Both sides seemingly are trying to avoid a full-blown regional war, but the situation remains highly volatile. And we should say, too, that as there is, as we know, opposition among Israelis to the Netanyahu government, not all Iranians support their regime's hostility towards Israel either, with some calling for a reassessment of the relationship. So again, the people on the ground, as it were, often taking a different view to those in charge, those in power. However, supporters of the Islamic Republic, who are large in number, remain committed to the hostile stance.
It feels like we're at that point where if something were to be misinterpreted or, you know, some action that someone's going to blame on Iran or Israel, whichever way it goes, this could totally escalate. Or hopefully, as we've talked about behind the scenes, things really are under control and we're not hearing everything that's happening.
No. I'm sure we're not. And I mean, I have my own, probably shouldn't mention these on the podcast, but I do wonder what brought about that attack on Damascus and what kind of discussion was going on about, well, can we, you know, let's take the U.S. position, for example. I don't know if the U.S. would have been involved in this kind of dialogue, but we want to, the Western allies want to show continued support to Israel, but they also at the same time want to send a message to Netanyahu about what's going on in Gaza. And so is there a way of kind of saving face, if that's the right word, of allowing Netanyahu some one victory, as it were, something he can present about how it's being defended? So the rhetoric then comes in. We have the ironclad support for Israel that came from President Biden. Other allies followed suit. It almost feels that there is an agreement on what's going on and the positioning. And if it is a kind of, not shadow war, but something that's kind of almost planned and is playing to certain rules, we've got to hope it's going to be contained. And mm-hmm. that Israel may be, they have to have another shot, as it were, hopefully with no deaths or escalation involved. but if both sides really want to keep the lid on full-scale escalation, as I'm sure they do, that there is kind of a way forward.
Right. Well, I think we've shown that the hostility between Israel and Iran is multifaceted, and it involves the historical grievances, ideological opposition, strategic regional conflicts, and internal alliance. It has it all.
It does. Yeah.
Oh, the situation's further complicated by internal politics and public opinion within both countries, as well as broader geopolitical dynamics of the Middle East, as we've talked about. Many commentators say the relationship is at a crossroads, like we just said. And in our suggested focus for intention this week, we suggest that the governments of both countries choose a path that seeks to de-escalate the tension between them. So our intention for this week is, we will that those in positions of influence and power within the Israeli and Iranian governments will be inspired and emboldened to pursue a path of de-escalating tensions between their two nations.
And again, this may be one where we don't know what's going on behind, well, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. We don't know what intelligence both sides have. I suspect very strong. You know, they have very, very well-developed intelligence networks that go very deep within their own countries. let's hope the wisdom prevails, as it were, and there is that movement of minds and hearts at that level.
Let's go the way of de-escalation and not escalation, for sure. That about wraps it up for this episode. Remember, you can connect with us in the Facebook group. And for live intention holding in Clive's Daily Insight Timer offerings, and with me in the Labyrinth Activist Network's Zoom calls. Details of how to hook up with these are in our show notes. Look out, too, for our next special topic episode, which we'll be releasing in the next few days. Thank you for listening and for sharing with us in holding intentions. We look forward to connecting again next time. And in the meantime,
thank you. Go well. Stay safe.
And remember, we're more powerful together.
Impact is presented by Ellen Bintz and Clive Johnson and produced by Impact Productions. Our theme music is by Chris Collins and our logo artwork is by Auto Classic. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, or your favorite podcast provider. We're a non-commercial podcast dedicated to people of any faith tradition or none who yearn for healing in our troubled world. Please pass on the word so others may join us in making an impact. Thank you for listening.